you can't think about the full picture. I'm not thinking about the finish line yet. I don't have the mileage ticking away on my computer. Cause that for me doesn't work. You just like, it's like each problem ahead of you. And I think you have to just enjoy that.
No fun had with Sarah Sturm.
No, not at all. Not in the morning. Good morning, Mel. It is bright. Well, it's not as early as it was when we first started recording with Sarah, but
no, it's not a bright day here. It's super grim, but
I hear actually it's quite nice. I rode in the rain on Monday. I felt very PNW vibes.
PNW vibes. Yeah, I mean, we're getting to the sunnier days, but I mean, Sarah, true ray of sunshine. That was
seriously super fun.
But yeah, we had Sarah Sturm on the show today, and folks in the ultra world may be like, who is Sarah Sturm? But if you ride gravel or have watched mountain biking or cyclocross or an earth American, I'm sure you know Sarah's name, and she's just
often known as Sturmy.
Yeah, absolute hoot. But we really wanted to have her on the show because, I mean, as much as speaking to just like bike packers and ultra racers is amazing, like there are so many folks who are doing big rides, and it's such a spectrum, and there's so much to be learned from someone like Sarah. So selfishly, that's why I wanted to talk to her. I mean, I thought she was the coolest person ever when I got into gravel. I DM'd her about tire widths, and of all the people I DM'd, I think she was the only person who answered me and didn't make me feel like a dummy at all.
It's amazing. And she, in the conversation, also talks about how she still answers those messages. So
yeah,
she's a real sunshine, like you mentioned. Yeah, I enjoy Sarah's bubbly personality and just her alternative way of going about professional gravel racing. She's doing it the way that works for her and shines a light on how you can make it fun and also race at the highest level. And we get into that in the podcast. For me, I really relate to her. And so it was kind of cool to hear somebody at the top of the sport in the discipline they're doing, kind of navigating things and learning and trying different things. And we talk about that 1% a little bit as well. And yeah, it's a wonderful podcast. We hope that you enjoy and just get to know Sarah a little bit better. She's a pretty rad person.
Yeah, super rad. So without further ado, let's jump into our conversation with Sarah Sturm. Well, it's early for all of us, but we have got a woman who hardly needs an introduction, Sarah Sturm, with the most fun energy in the morning. But Sarah, I have a little bit of beef with you that we need to start with. I saw you post about a new Wahoo feature that they can control Spotify, and you said, but Taylor Swift. Sarah, I knew.
I should have known that this was the beef. I should have also done an asterisk saying, Swifties, please, for the love of God, don't cancel me. Listen. It is like, this is the scene. I love Taylor. I really do. Because we are the same age. And so I very much like appreciate who she is, and I feel so insanely left out. I feel so left out, which is why I have to be a bully, because I don't like her music, but I like her. I wish I liked her music, but I like bad, gross stuff.
Okay, so like, what
not wholesome?
What's bad?
I mean, not gross, but I like Idols and Ty Segall, like just annoying hipster shit that's I don't even want to tell you because it's very like, of course she's wearing a jumpsuit in her bed.
Well,
but I wish I liked Taylor. I think, no, I've tried. I really have.
You have.
Mm-hmm. I just don't like her music.
That's okay. We won't blame you.
I'm the odd man out. And then I feel like if you hate Taylor, then it's like, oh, we get it. You're trying to be like cool and different. And I'm like, no, I'm really just like, I want to be included.
I support everything Taylor is doing.
I support.
I want to make a shirt that says, but I do like Taylor. Oh my God. Oh. Thank God that was the beef.
Oh yeah. That's why I was like,
what did I say?
No. Oh, no. Well, you use some fighting words that if you have Swift, like you better check those.
Oh, I have checked the DMs. I was put into my place.
DMs
I should have
also.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that we just learned about. That's cool.
Oh my God. Well, thanks for getting
up. Glad we cleared the air.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all good. Beef's good. We don't need to come for you. I don't.
Oh no, you can.
Oh, that's maybe my favorite way we've ever started a podcast. The sheer look of panic you're like
on your face,
the going through the Rolodex in your brain.
I was like, what did I post?
Oh, the fear all the time. Oh no, no.
I think you should start every podcast like that. Like, okay, so here's our beef for you.
Oh my God.
Really, yes. Like get people either backed into a corner or like,
yeah.
Or,
oh, yeah.
Or
rile them up.
Yeah. So you are amidst the chaos.
Hold them accountable.
Are you in Durango right now?
Yes. Yes. And it was like the most spring weather yesterday. It was literally, and I know, like, I've lived in Durango for almost 17 years now. So, like, I should know.
Yeah.
But it was like, sunny, windy, rainy, sunny, snowy, snowy and sunny, snowy and rainy. Like, all in, like, I only had, like, a two-hour ride, and Dylan and I were like, what the hell is going on?
You have to carry everything back home. For that. Were you carrying a rain jacket, a winter jacket?
Yes, I am the doomsday prepper of bike riders. Oh, my God. Cynthia, you should see me bike pack. It's insane. I carry a three-person tent.
Just for you.
Yes. It's all I have. But yes, like, it's...
I
carry a stove. I do all the things. I like to be comfy. Hmm. When I have the choice, I like...
Well, I guess when you spend a lot of time being very... weight
uncomfy
pack. Yeah, like uncomfy, yeah. Like, you know, figuring out what might be the best to carry for a short endurance race, when you have I think Mel and I would say we'd probably do the same thing versus racing or bike packing.
Yeah,
we enjoy having all of the extra fancy stuff, like,
I mean,
the
I race with a pillow.
I also, like, race with a pillow.
Oh, I would too.
Like, okay,
they get tiny.
Yeah, and someone came for me like, there, that's such a frill, and I was like, well, it's just not the same sleeping with your helmet on. I'm sorry. There's a line where I draw that, like...
Oh, no. That's when I'm like, maybe I'm too old. Because I like being cozy. Uh-huh. I also just love... I think that's why, like, the racing that you girls do is so far out of the realm for me.
Really?
Just because I like to be... Yeah. It's just uncomfy for so long. And I also am, like, kind of scared of the dark.
I mean, we talk about being scared of the dark all the time, but
I am, yeah.
But there's got to be a few events on your calendar in the Grand Prix that, or not, like, I can think of the Traca, you start in the dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, actually, and I'm going back again.
Oh my God, you're going to the Traca?
Mm-hmm. Are you going?
I'm going. I'll see you there.
I'm assuming you're doing the, like, super long one.
Yeah,
okay,
the 560.
Okay, so also, sweet. Leo was like trying to get me to do that. And I was like, you know, there's really no way in hell. And I have beef with the shorter long one.
You gotta
but
go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You start in the dark and end in the dark. And funny enough, that was like the part, like ending in the dark was the thing that I was like, well, and starting was the thing that I was like most nervous about when I started, and it was my favorite part.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then, like, camping alone, like, really freaks me out. So that's where, like, I don't, I just have a lot of respect for what you guys do. Because I was like telling that, like, we were car camping, like, with my dog and my fiance Dylan.
Yeah.
And I still was like a little spooked. I just don't think it's for me.
Admittedly, you know, I'm scared.
A lot of people
often
feel that way. Yeah.
It's the only, it's like actually the only thing that is like the piece that I'm like, ah, I don't know about the ultra distance stuff. I'm like, it just, I don't know. It's the scaredy cat saying, like, I mean, I've done the Colorado Trail, but I went with like a couple of friends.
Yeah.
And it just, I loved the camping. Like, I like when I feel safe, and like, so often, maybe it's because I grew up in a city.
Yeah.
And like kind of a sketchy city, but I just do the like,
I mean,
something could be out there. It's not animals, it's people.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, this is goes against everything that anyone ever recommends. But, like, whenever I tell people this, they're like, Mel, don't do that. I sleep with my, like, Swiss Army knife under my pillow.
I would. I totally
would. Yeah. Yeah. Whenever I'm camping, I'm like, or if I'm somewhere where there's bears, I'll put my bear. Well, obviously, you put the bear spray beside you because
right.
if there's a bear and then you spray them. But I have my arsenal beside me while I'm sleeping, just in the event that anything.
I never thought about that.
I've done that when I camp. Yeah. When I camp alone, again, it's like if something actually happened.
Yeah, totally.
There's no way. There's no way I would like ever. But I think it's just like the peace of mind to like actually, so I can get like 2 minutes of sleep maybe. But yeah, I don't know. Uh-huh. Anyway, I digress. The racing you girls do is gnarly.
Well, I don't know. The racing you do is
pretty gnarly.
What
you do is gnarly. You
insane.
Hurt yourself for, like, a lot of hours.
Yeah. Ah, man. But we, like, actually, I guess we don't really sleep. Like, I always forget that, like, you just don't sleep for
the night
so
of
I'm
a
like,
race.
Oh, the sleep deprivation. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Leadville. Ooh. I'll, like, look back at, like, my Whoop, and I'm like, oh, my God, I raced Leadville, the fastest I've ever done, on 3 hours of sleep. Zero REM sleep.
And is that...
So I'm like...
Is that just stress or?
I think it's like pretty common. Well, Leadville is unique because it's at 10,000 feet. So you're also battling like altitude, and no one, unless you have oxygen and are like extremely acclimated to that, which maybe some are, but I would say like 90% of the field is probably dealing with the same thing. So there's like comfort
right.
in that you're not alone.
But you're all sleeping like shit.
Yeah, I think it's just nerves. Like, you just can't control it. Like, you just kind of know you're not going to sleep the night before.
I would say with ultras, it's similar. I mean, if we start at 7 or 6 a.m. or 8 a.m. even, it's similar. But we do occasionally have night starts, and that's kind of nice. But then you're just sitting around all day.
Oh, that's so nice.
It is. It's like a...
Yeah, but then you can't
good
sleep
and
all
bad
day.
At the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you're just awake even longer. But I would say, like... The biggest...
Even talking about starts, I'm like,
they're coming up too. Even the biggest differences, though, I always compare it to, like, I love dull pain, like the sharp pain of like a needle. You know, that just to me is much harder to deal with in terms of like, you know, endurance versus something like cyclocross. Oh my gosh, couldn't do cyclocross. But even the, you know, the Mid-Souths, like kind of like that situation, or even shorter, like I'm sure some of the racing, you know,
it's hard.
It's just like, one, you were doing cyclocross, like how did you find yourself into that short distance? Like, obviously,
yeah.
You know, in college you were a racer and you sort of like started, you went into that after, but how did you go from cyclocross to the ultra stuff? Like, what was the,
that's
the move?
Well, the move was that they folded my cyclocross team and then they handed me a gravel bike.
Oh, okay.
they were like, here. And I was like, all right, sweet. But I think I was like always kind of motivated by that ultra stuff, like just always kind of curious, like how far I could ride.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really truly just fueled off of curiosity and the fact that I don't know how to race endurance. So like I started... It was like BWR was my first gravel race.
And how long was that compared to a cyclocross race?
Well, it was 138 miles.
Good entry point.
And oh my God. Well, I always say like I really nailed the timing of my career in gravel. Like, it was like sort of before anyone like was a specialist. So we were all sort of coming from different sides. And, you know, it was early in the season. So, like, I had all this pointy power from cyclocross, which I think back to, and I'm like, I know I can do this. Like, I know I have it in my legs. I just haven't worked on that in such a long time, like that fast twitch stuff. But I honestly think ultra is a lot of mindset, to be honest.
Yeah, truth.
You either, like, have that, or you have to work up to it, or you just don't and you hate it. I have a lot of friends that, you know, unfortunately have been, you know, in the like mountain bike scene or cyclocross scene and like don't like gravel and endurance, which is totally fair. Like sometimes I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah.
Like I miss cyclocross, but yeah, you just can't convince someone that like going from like a 45 minute cyclocross race, that is sort of what I love too. I miss it. But you know, it's just a different like racing at, you know, zone 3, zone 4 for 12 hours at Unbound is a very different experience than being done, or like your race being over if you like miss a pedal or like wash out in a turn. That's the downside of shorter stuff. But I don't know. That was like a really long answer to your question. I think for me, I was just like fueled by the curiosity of like, ah, I don't even know if I can finish this BWR race. And so I like started as fast as I could, thought I was losing, and ended up winning. That's the shortest story or the shortest way I can tell that story.
I love that. And it seems like from the outside looking in, like, of course, you have the Lifetime Grand Prix. So there is a mix of distances in there. But the things you're choosing to do outside of that are starting to skew a little bit longer. Like last year, you raced track is 360 kilometers, right? And so Unbound 200, can't convert freedom units, but I've done it once. So it's like 320 something K. So it's something like that. Anyways,
I think they're similar in distance, but elevation,
I think
gain...
Traco is like, and just the time, like Traco took me like 15 and a half hours.
It's a huge ride.
And then Unbound with the mud yesterday. I wish. last year it took like 12 hours for the top three. So it's, and I think that it's like 25 mile difference. Like Traco is 25 extra miles.
But still so much elevation gain that makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And also,
and the
terrain
is like
a pack.
Just different.
You're much more solo riding.
Unbound is just, I'm going to try and do the whole 100.
Are you really going to do the 100?
I love racing 100.
I love
it's
it.
Kind of that like, that spicy, like, I mean, oh my gosh, Mid-South was like the fastest, like, it was such a fast start.
So
like,
fun.
I think, not to get dorky, but this is like where I'm at with my career. I'm like leaning into the dorky data stuff. I have not been that person ever.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But I like set power records.
Whoa,
in the first, like,
that's so cool.
10 minutes of 100 mile race. I remember the first time I did Leadville, I was like asking a friend who, you know, is a mass start. And I was like, is everyone racing the hunt? Is there a different distance? Like, why is everyone
going
so
fast? Hard.
Yeah. But that's just how. And then you have to like, you have to do it because otherwise you get left behind.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some women I race against who like don't start very fast and they just like shift into a different gear like later in the race. And I just count on Haley Smith always passing me in the 11th hour.
She's wild. Like looking at the way she finishes races is wild.
Oh, so my impressive. Gosh. I love her. She's a really good friend of mine. And I'm so annoyed with always getting passed by her in the very end of the race.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I obviously that. You've been training this mileage for like, like to compete at any high level, you're putting in a ton of time. It's probably the same as like someone racing, you know, multi-day ultra.
Yeah.
If not more, because a lot of people who are doing like ultras are, I would say, more hobbyists because it's less professional.
Sure.
But I think the one thing I really want to like hear more about is how did you dial in your mindset? Because these races are so darn long. And I know that, like, at least for what you share on the internet, they're not easy going for you every time. Like, nothing is perfect.
No. Yeah, totally. No, that's such a good question. I mean, I think about it a lot because I have a lot of friends who do ultra. I have a lot of friends who do XCO racing and short stuff. So it's kind of cool to see like how the preparation is similar, is different. I think regardless, you always have to have like a really strong mindset to be a competitive cyclist or athlete, I should say. I mean, what about the woman who just like set
Oh my gosh, Jasmine,
watching her finish, I was just crying.
I was crying, that's also.
Do you know how close she was?
90 seconds.
So close.
I get goosebumps.
I know. Oh,
I just can like, because we've all been there. You're like, you are, you can see the finish and you're like, I actually might not make it. Like, do you know? Oh, and she's just so sleep deprived. Like how many, it took her just around 60 hours, like 58 hours. That's insane. I've never been up for that long. Anyway, I digress again. Welcome to doing a podcast with me.
I know it's the best.
That's what this is about though. Yeah. Digressing.
Yeah. So this year, like, I think sometimes I worry about doing a disservice to the community because I project like I do have fun and I really enjoy this and I don't, but I do take it seriously. Like yeah. You have to, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to be competitive, yes. and like to have this relevancy. But I also want to share that like, you know, I am a really competitive person. I always have been. Like I've always been super into sports. And cycling was that thing when I got to college that I was like, wow, there's so many different facets that you can take this. And I've raced for a long period. I've done pro road racing, pro mountain bike racing, pro cross racing, gravel. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here we are. So I don't want to like paint this picture that I just like fell into this sport,
no.
You know, at like, because sometimes I think that like those stories get sort of like glorified, mm-hmm. and then it like makes people feel bad for trying. Because, mm-hmm. like, I think it's, what's that, Billy Madison? It's cool to pee your pants. It's cool to try. Well, also, we pee in our pants. Like, okay. That's the level that we're at. So, like,
wild.
I'm happy to answer that, those questions too. I will talk about that all day. Because that is the, I get asked two things on Instagram the most. What tires do you run? And I'll include, like, width and that sort of thing in that question. And then, like, what do you do if you have to go to the bathroom?
Oh my God. So. People ask you that? I've never been asked.
Because the women can't just. No, I talked to my, so my partner raced at like the US Pro Conti circuit. And I always asked him, I'm like, what did you do if you had to pee? He's like, oh, easy. Like all the guys slow roll and then we just whip it out, mm-hmm. and we go pee.
Yeah.
It's not the same for women.
And he does that sometimes. Like he does that when we're like casually riding. But I'm like, dude, if I have to
pee. Guys do that. I mean.
I'm stopping, yeah. Or, I mean, I've never peed my pants just because, like, over a multi-day race, you pee in your pants and you're ruined. Ruined.
That's it. That's an infection waiting to happen. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Rebecca Rush got into, like, a comment, not battle at all, but she, like, commented on one of my photos after Unbound because I was like, the reason one of my shoes is clean and the other one is muddy. There's a really simple answer for that. But yeah. Well, women's racing is really different, right? So like we're oftentimes, I mean, this is changing, but like we're oftentimes stacked into groups of dudes and then we have no idea. Like Mid-South was a great example. It's like, I love that event and I love Bobby, but it was like a good reminder of like, oh my God, we have to have different starts than the men. Like it really, really affected the outcome of the race. So you're like stuck in this group. I mean, I had to pee that whole race and I didn't pee my pants because I was in a group of like 50 dudes and it was just like four women on the front rotating and I'm not going to like pee in front of all of them. And it's, you know, we have different anatomy, obviously, so we can't like slow roll. But also you have no control over like the race either, because like, you know, that two other girls are up ahead in groups of dudes and like there's just like different motivations. So it's like, it's a really hard thing. And like, especially at Unbound, I mean, like the year Sophia won, she had to pee in her pants like three times.
Wow.
Like she's not stopping.
No.
And holding that pee.
I stopped at the porta potty, but I didn't win.
I love that. Oh. Holding your pee is so bad for you too. I mean, I know this, it's obvious, but you know, with ultra racing, sometimes I wait like 12 hours to pee. And
Cynthia.
Oh my
The reason why is because your anatomy, once you pee and you put your bib shorts back on, it changes everything. It's different. Like, you have to carry a pee rag. Like,
there are just rules
and stuff. So I can't imagine holding it when you're going, like, you know, zone four for, like, the whole race, essentially. You're like,
oh, you're just like, oh, I hope I'm dehydrated enough.
Which is terrible.
Oh my gosh. It's so gnarly. I mean, I raced Leadville, like, the first year I did Leadville, Rose and I were battling for first, and we were like, she got off to pee and I passed her, and then I got off to pee and she passed me, and it was like battle. And then the next year it was just this different level, and I was racing with Rose again for the podium again, and I was like, remember last year when we had time to pee and we didn't have to pee in a pan? We were like, LOL.
Times are changing.
Those days are gone.
Oh my god.
So anyway, back to the training question. I think everyone's approach is same but different. Like, this year I've done way more volume than I've ever done, and I committed, you know, basically all of February, which is a big commitment for me. People like Sophia commit half of their season to going down to Tucson and training and doing massive. Actually, she doesn't do crazy. Sophia does not do crazy volume. This is what's cool. Sophia doesn't do crazy volume. She does crazy intensity. Haley Smith does a lot, like, more volume than any of us, and intensity too. And I'm somewhere like floaty in between. But I used to, like, just bike pack to cross country races to train. So I just kind of like trying all of the things, and like, I think whatever is motivating, like, I just kind of want to see, like, if this works for me. So you have to try something a little bit different. So, like, you know, I have some people tease me, like, oh, wow, I've never heard you talk about power. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying something different. And, like, I don't know, it's fun to, like, kind of tweak stuff. And I think everyone does that to a certain extent. But then when it comes down to racing, and Dylan, my partner, and I have this conversation a lot, like, I guarantee you there are women in front of me and behind me. There's probably more women behind me in a race that have much higher power numbers, much higher than I do. But it doesn't necessarily equate to being a good bike racer. And that's not, like, no, like, I think that that's, like, sort of this, like, misnomer with, like, I'm just, like, discovering the world of power and the world of Strava and the world of carbs per hour. That's my jam this season. But it's, like, going back to, like, the mindset piece, like, I think there's a lot there. Like, you know, we get into the marginal gains world of, like, you know, whatever, like, carbs per hour, or like shaving weight, or, you know, sussing out different parts of the course, and everyone has a different approach. But I also think my coach and I talk about this a lot. You have to be a good problem solver, and you have to enjoy that. And, like, I'm the type of racer that the more chaotic and stressful the situation, the more excited I am. And I think I have to, like, I thank cyclocross for that, for sure. Like, the mud was stressful, no doubt. Like, I was not enjoying that, but I also am like, all right, problem solving. Like, okay, the mud is getting gunked up in my derailleur. I'm just lifting this bike that I absolutely feel like I made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
Last minute. And I'm like running, like soft walking with my bike on my shoulder for miles. And, like, I don't know, like, I just go into, like, robot, you know, race mode of, like, you can't think about the full picture. I'm not thinking about the finish line yet. I don't have the mileage ticking away on my computer. Cause that for me doesn't work. You just, like, it's like each problem ahead of you. And I think you have to just enjoy that, you know, like, and then you pee in your pants, and then 2 seconds later you flat your tire and that's another problem.
What a perfect.
You watch first place go whizzing by. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's a 200 mile race. Like, so much happens.
So much can happen. Because it's like you said, it was 12 hours last year for the winning woman. Mm-hmm. And, like,
and usually
that is
faster when there's no mud.
Oh, way.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I've only done Unbound with mud. So.
True. I mean, it's an outdoor sport. That's part of it. It's unfortunate, but, you know.
I mean, I was. I personally felt for the amateurs. Like, mm-hmm. that was
agreed.
The yeah. like, not to bring up this issue, but mm-hmm. like, as professionals, I'm like, I didn't really have sympathy for people who were complaining about it, because it's our job to deal with situations like that. And like, and not to like throw shots here, but like, I don't know, like, it's like, we're literally paid to do this, and you have to be a good problem solver. You have to know how your bike, like, unlucky things happen, but there's also like mostly bad decision making. And I have been the, you know, at the shitty end of that too. Like, I've made poor decisions and paid the consequences. Like, the flat tire, that was my fault. I chose a bad line. Ellen and I were riding next to each other, and I chose the bad line and got a flat. So that's on me. I'm not going to blame, you know, the course for that. And like, the same thing with the mud. Like, Unbound has been going on a hell of a lot longer than any of us have been gravel pros. So like, you kind of have to like rise to the, in my opinion, like, I think the amateurs going through the mud, that's a very different story. Mm-hmm. They do not get mm-hmm. their equipment for free. Mm-hmm. They like, that was probably the race of their season. They spend a ton of money with their families to, like, that is a different thing. But as pros, like, it's our job. Mm. Like, sometimes, like, you have to do, I don't know. That's hot take.
I love it.
Sometimes you have a bad title, day at work.
Yeah.
Beef with Sarah Sturm.
Hates Taylor Swift and likes Mud at Unbound. Thinks you should toughen up.
Just about every Sarah, clickbait thing.
You said earlier, and this is, I relate to this a lot. And I find it interesting that this year you're kind of diving into the power and into, you know, changing up and finding what works for you a little bit. And I think for me, that's how this year is going. I'm diving in to try and figure out things a little more. I'm working with a coach for the first time in a long time. And, you know, I think about it kind of at this point now where, for you especially, you're really working towards that 1%, that mm-hmm. little bit of gain you can get by spending a month in Tucson or paying attention to your nutrition. How has that been in this way that relates to being fun? Are you enjoying, like, is it something that you are having a good experience with, or is it, do you feel obligated to try and find that 1%, because obviously you're a professional, it's your job?
Dude, that's such a great question, and that's cool. I'm stoked to hear that you're also like kind of on that same trajectory, because like, I feel like there's both sides of that too. You have like I'm not super type A, but you have type A people that are trying to do other like less type A things.
Yeah.
And then you have like, I don't know, Cynthia, if you're like more in that type A basket,
no,
but like,
no.
Yeah. Totally. I'm like, I can like make you. My guess. Yeah. And then you have like us who are not, that I'm like, I'm going to push the envelope and see how far against, you know, that edge I can get. And like, there are times that like, it's a lot of checking in, right? Like, I call it robot mode. Some people call it monk mode, but like, the day in, day out, like, my life was pretty monotonous, which when I was doing that big training block, I mean, I was doing 30-hour weeks, like, three or four of them
you
in a row.
You just can't function. All you can do is ride your bike and eat.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you how grouchy. Okay, I didn't know this, but, like, physically, I was not that fatigued, because it's a lot of zone two.
Yeah,
and, like,
but
it's like zone two jail. But then at the end, oh, my God. Oh, my God, you guys. I can't even, like, the sound of my Wahoo reminding me to eat.
Oh.
I was like,
eh.
The number of times I've heard that stupid alarm. And like, I actually got a DM from the woman who was part of the UX team that designed that feature at Wahoo. And she's like, it's so cool to see you using that. And I was like, oh my God, by the end of this block, I was like ready to rip my Wahoo off.
You're like, why did you design this damn feature?
Why am I using it?
I can but relate.
No,
I just
was so, yes, you just hear it go off like a thousand times. And you're like, I get it. I'm not eating.
I'll eat later.
Oh my God. But honestly, like, I didn't expect the like emotional fatigue. Like, I was just a shell, because it was just like, and then I was like, all right, I called my coach and I was like, we're done. There's no more of this. I need more than a rest day to like mentally recover from like And some people can do that. Like Sophie and Keegan love, I think they like the training more than the racing. And I like training, but I just can't do like, and that's not even structured. Like, so it's just constantly like asking yourself, like, okay, am I enjoying this? Am I having fun doing this? And like, for the most part, like it has been fun learning new things, like working with a nutritionist. Cause like I am in a place where with my career where I can like, okay, I am not inherently interested in nutrition. It's not my journey. I'm not someone who's going to like look at carbs. Like truly, I would like feel my eyes glaze over when someone said grams of carbs per hour. So I never looked at it ever. And then I would just have these spectacular bonks at like mile 90 of 100. And I decided that sucked more than looking at carbs per hour. Truth. Mm-hmm. So then I hired Kyla with Nutritional Revolution. And she is great at putting it into terms that I enjoy and like sending me recipes. And like, you know, I'm a functioning adult. I enjoy cooking for myself. But like, these are areas that like as an athlete, like I was never willing to like give up that like freedom of like, I don't want to count calories and I don't want to look like weigh my food and be like, you know, dip into that disordered eating side. But it's actually done the opposite of just made me like aware of like what is actually happening with my body. So like, as long as it's like educational and informational and like, I feel like I'm growing, then I think that's fun and enjoyable and like there's progress. But then it can quickly tip into like, okay, I'm getting a little obsessive about this. Like my coach will assign me like RPE, which is rate of perceived exertion. So you're not looking at your power numbers, which I actually love those sorts of efforts because you're just like, that's kind of, I would say I'm more of an RPE athlete. Like I am not someone who's like looking at my power. I never look at my power in the race. Like I don't even have it on the screen because it takes up precious room on my map screen. You know, it's just not something that's valuable for me. Like I will always push as hard as I can go. Like seeing a power number is not going to motivate me to like go harder. I'm not like that. There's other people who are. And the thing is, and like you girls might race against, I don't know, like it, I feel like the like ultra endurance is more of like the non-type A-ers and like kind of the more
you
like
you would be surprised.
Oh, well, maybe
people
it's
go.
Both.
It's like you get both ends of the spectrum. There's
inform
like
me.
There's like people who okay, I fall under the category of but I find this satisfying. It's from less of an obsession point. I will like, I love maps, so I love spending time like looking at the elevation profile,
yeah.
Putting. Like I do my nerdy, like I upload the map to Google Maps and then find all the businesses on route. And I've created this really big list and I'm so proud of it. And I share it with my friends because I'm like, look at what I made. Isn't this cool? And
yeah,
they're like, thanks for
I am the opposite.
They're like, thanks for doing my homework for me.
Yeah. But yeah, I would be in your camp.
But there's also certain things that like there's people who have like plans when they're racing and I firmly fall into the camp of I have zero plans.
Don't plan.
I'm just going to
ride
and listen to my
Sounds
body
like, yeah.
and
yeah.
make sure that like I'm a little bit of a doomsday prepper in the food departments so that I have a variety of things I like because when it comes down to it and you're in 40 degree C weather and you've been on your bike for 18 hours and you're like carbs gross like you just need anything
yeah.
and everything
anything yeah
but oh, people in their kit grids and they're like, how much does your bike weigh? And da 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 da. I'm like, I don't want to know how much my bike weighs. When I'm going up a climb, I don't want to be crying because I didn't leave something at home.
Yes. Yes. I think I always go by the like, and I tell like the junior cyclists that I work with this too, like, you just have to do whatever alleviates stress. And like, I'm going to use Haley Smith as another example because she and I are really close. And we're also like the most, we were laughing at a dinner in Tucson. Because we're so different. She used to be a dancer. So she's like,
no way.
So type A.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I
was like,
no idea.
Ah, that makes so much sense.
So much sense.
But she, I was telling her, like, Sophia and I have been friends for a very long time before we were ever doing this gravel stuff together. And Sophia has just always been super intense. And she and I, like, we don't mix well before a race. Like at Worlds, we like stayed together and I was like, I stressed her out. She really stressed me out because, like, we were, like, fully different approaches. Like, you know, she had her meal plan and was cooking, like, plain chicken and rice. And they were like, let's go out to eat again and have a glass of wine. And, like, it just stressed her out. She had, like, this detailed plan of, like, seeing the course with her training. She was there for a week before. And I was like, that stressed me out because then I felt like I had to do that. And, like, it just was not this good mix. And Haley and I were laughing about it because she was like, oh my God, I'm way more like Sophia, but, like, cranked up. And she was like, I would stress you out so much. And I was like, no, I think the more I get into the sport, especially in the, like, distance range that I'm doing, I think most people are in that type A category. And I think I am not. And I've just come to be okay with that and know that, like, it's okay to have a different approach. And, like, you know, but there's also like Lachlan's of the world. I mean, like, he's way more relaxed than I am. But, you know, I think
seems
he has,
like, he's just, yeah, living and riding some of his bike.
I think he has a bit of the, like, Courtney DeWalter approach where, like, I think, yes, if you're, like, enough talented, mm-hmm, you can be super laid back.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Like, Keegan could probably be really laid back because I think he just has, like, but he's not. I mean, he's not. But I'm just using these people because, like, yeah, I mean, they're all my friends,
you relate,
but I just
to
think
them.
It's
they're
interesting.
In the same sphere as you.
Yeah. And I just always think, like, I think doing, like, a sociology study on, like, different personality types in cycling would be really fascinating. But, like, we're all really different. And I just think you have to do whatever alleviates stress for yourself. And that is that varies, you know. Some people look at power and that helps them, like, quantify things and alleviate stress because they feel like they're on track. And other people, it stresses them out and it makes them feel like it's a limiter. So, like, you just kind of have to know how your own brain works. And there's not really actually, like, a cookie cutter formula to this.
That lends really well into, like, something that I think as a team athlete that I've been in the past with Crit Racing, I want to ask you, in terms of you brought on Ellen to your team, how did that come about? You were obviously racing, yeah, by yourself for a while. Did you have a teammate when you did cyclocross?
Yeah, well, sort of. I had a Canadian teammate, Ruby West.
Ruby!
Go Canada!
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wonder, like, you obviously know yourself very well, and as a professional athlete, you have to, and you know how to navigate being around other people that are maybe a different personality than you. What made you want to have a teammate? That's like a huge deal. I mean, I've thought about it for myself. Like, do I start a program and have a teammate? Is it something that, you know, would benefit the young women of the sport or whatever?
Totally.
How did you make that choice? And what did that look like for you with Ellen? Like, how did you choose Ellen?
Yeah. No, that's another great question. Well, I came from, like, soccer teams and swim teams and track teams growing up. And then when I got into cycling, it was also team oriented because it was on the Fort Lewis team. So it was always, like, super social. And actually going on to my first UCI cyclocross team with 10 Speed Hero Specialized, it was kind of isolating. And it was, like, the first time, because Ruby was so much younger than me. And flying in from Canada, like, we didn't have a team environment. It was, like, very much like fly into this race and then do the races and go home. And I really missed having, and, like, no one from Durango was really doing UCI cross at the time. Like, you know, there was just not this, like, circuit. And, like, I have to say that is, like, the plus side of the Grand Prix is, like, you are on this circuit and it's really social. And, like, even though by the end you're, like, so over it, it's like social and fun. And, like, it lends itself to this, like, you know, kind of community feel of just weirdos, you know, at, like, a pro level.
It's like a traveling
and
circus.
When I got, yeah, totally. Like, when I got into cyclocross, the USGP series had just folded. So, like, there wasn't that anymore. So everyone was really dispersed. And, like, so when I started racing gravel, it was at the time where you could just, like, kind of show up and, like, be competitive. Like, you didn't have to have a crew and a team and blah. And then as it evolved, it was like, oh, damn, this, like, actually requires some resources to get into now, which I was like, at the time I was like, no, keep it, like, chill. But now I'm like, I get it. Like, people are making money. They're going to try and go away faster. Like, you have to either like rise to that level or like do something else or just do it for fun. And I just kind of felt like Ellen was always this athlete. Like, I coached her when she was on the junior mountain bike team here in Durango when she was like 14. And coach is a loose term. Like, those kids were shredding way harder than I could. I could just beat them up hills. and Ellen was just always like that, like right on the bubble, like right about to like, yeah, like she was like almost winning national titles or like just always right there. And I'm like, it's just so hard to get that support as women anyway, like outside of college. And she was in that like weird flexi year of like, do I commit to my career? Because she had just, you know, gotten a job in her field of biology and moved to Missoula and did all, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I just feel like she deserved an opportunity. And I did the last best ride up in Whitefish, I believe. And Ellen did that race as well. And I remember I won. And then I like, I don't know, not like 10 minutes later, I like turned around and Ellen came in second on her mountain bike.
Oh my God.
Like, damn. Okay, Ellen. And luckily I was with my team manager at Specialized at the time. And I was like, all right, we need to like get this girl some bikes and like, you know, help her like get some support in the sport. And then it just kind of evolved in from like this mentorship piece to like last year was sort of like half mentor, but like she's like more of a team member. And then this year she's like on the team, and we're calling it her senior year. She's gonna graduate onto her own like privateer program next year, just because like she just wants to. And I get it, like, you know, I think no matter how we like push it out marketing wise, it's always gonna feel like she's on Sarah Sturm's team, and that just kind of sucks for her. And it's just hard to get out from under that. So I want her to like have her own thing. So she has all the contacts. She still has my support. We'll probably still travel together, but it'll look different for her next year.
I love that. I love the support and just wanting to like get someone, like lend someone a hand that maybe you had that hand or maybe you didn't. But it is so
yeah,
true.
Totally.
That it's like it is harder. I don't want to be that person, but it is harder for women to get forward in this sport. It just seems like there's still so much further to go, so to have that support mm-hmm. available is huge. And also like kudos to you, to both of you, for being like, okay, there's also a space where it makes sense for her to step into her own. Not that she yeah. wasn't in her own being part of your team, but to know that like she can stand on her own, she's fully capable yeah. of that now, but like there's just a natural breaking point so that perhaps someone else can fill that seat and rise yeah. to ride on their own.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, like I think there's like two different paths into the sport. Like, you know, obviously results, like if you're trying to be a professional athlete, results matter, and like there's no two ways to spin that. But it's also like really hard to like get to a point where you're competitive enough and have enough support to get that result. And a lot of the times it is dependent on how much money you yeah. have and the opportunity there. And so like, you know, I think about this all the time with like other athletes. Like for me and Ellen, it made sense. Like she was moving back to Durango. Like it was very much like a perfect fit in so many ways. Cause like I couldn't support someone, like I couldn't afford to like pay for their flights, you know, to a race from a different place. Like at least we have this shitty old school bus. And Ellen is like, you know, able to like sit in this stupid school bus. And like Ellen, I want to also like give her props. Like she fills in for all of my weaknesses. Like the things that I'm really bad at, Ellen is extremely good at, and vice versa. So like she is super smart. She's really observant. She's a really hard worker. And so I think like she really like saw the opportunity and like took it and ran with it, which is why I have zero problems sticking my neck out for her specifically, because, you know, I've tried some other things and I'm just like, oh yeah, Ellen is kind of a unicorn because like she can take the opportunity and like took that on her own and like stepped it up. Where I think a lot of kids that are used to being in these junior programs sort of see that support as like, you know, a given. And I'm like, it's not at all.
Yeah.
Once you don't have it, you really realize what you had.
Yeah. Once you turn 23 and you're out of that program, you're just,
oh boy, it's
like
rough.
Like a fish out of water, basically.
Yeah. And I think that that is sort of a disservice to these kids, because, like, I don't know, I've been on enough in sports enough to see the, like, parental influence too. And I think parents should never be involved with their kids' sports past, I mean, truly, like, past the teen years. And even then, I'm like, I don't know. I think it just complicates everything. Like, I know it's always, like, so well intentioned, but it's really complicated, because, like, there's no division. Like, the parents just want the best for their kid, but sometimes it just gets, like, so messy. And then sometimes, like, there's, like, a level of, like, I mean, here in Durango, like, I don't want to say spoiled, because, like, that makes it sound like these kids are, like, unaware of, like, what they have. And I don't think all of them are that. I think a lot of them see how cool and how special and how privileged they are and, like, really make use of that. And then some of them really don't. So it's just a mixed bag. But anyway.
Yeah. Partially, like, the environment you're in, partially a maturity thing, right? Like,
and the athlete.
Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily love who I was when I was a kid, but I mean, who does? Oh, maybe some people were angelic and wonderful, but I definitely don't know that I was a very pleasant 14-year-old, if you ask my mom.
I don't know if a pleasant 14-year-old exists. And then add in competition. Whew.
Yeah. I just want to check on time. How are you doing, Sarah?
We're good.
Okay, cool. I'll just chop that out. But you mentioned Dylan many times, and Dylan is your partner, fiance.
Yeah.
How does he fit into the equation of your racing? Like, it seems like he's very involved, very supporting. Like, does he have a role on the team? Like, what's that dynamic like?
Yeah, I mean, like everything, it's really evolved. I mean, I remember sitting on the floor of our old duplex together when I got, you know, basically the opportunity of a lifetime with Specialized 10-Speed Hero. And it was like the situation that I was like, this is huge. This is definitely going to change our lives right now, like for the near future. And I was like, you know, it's always been a group decision, if you will. And like, of course, Dylan was like stoked for me and like happy to support. And, you know, but you know, when you make the choice to be a professional athlete, you're basically choosing yourself first. And like, there's no two ways around that. And it's really hard on a partnership. And it's hard on families and friends and like all of it. Cause like, boy, in order to be like something you said, like we're chasing this like 1%, you know, and like even having a dog, like I always ask myself, like, I mean, because I've had Norman for 10 years.
How do you
years,
have
like,
a dog far... and do everything you do?
It is like, listen, when I was doing those 30-hour weeks, this is all I had time for. I would wake up, I would walk Norman on the leash, which is a bummer for him, enough for him to like go poop in the morning. And then luckily I had a living situation where like my housemates also had dogs. So I didn't have like the extreme guilt of leaving him so alone all day. Well, I trained for 6 to 8 hours and then I would come home so tired, walk Norman right when I got home. I barely had enough time to cook myself dinner and then go to bed and do it all over again. And that's all like, and it was like single parenting, you know, because Dylan is back home, like doing, you know, our kitchen remodel and like getting all my bikes ready. So it's like, we are so, so pinned and like I'm not complaining at all, but that like I'm just like shedding light on like I truly don't understand how like I have a friend who you know works like an actual job, not just like bike industry job. And I'm not trying to, like when I say not bike industry, like they don't, it's not like you get to go on a 3-hour lunch ride, you know, at her job. And I'm like, listen, you like, it's not talent, it's just time. You just don't have this, like you don't get the same time to train. Like we're doing the number of hours you're working at an office is when I'm training and like, do like, oh my God. And then there's the straight sessions, you know, then you're having to like balance this ride and strength and then, you know, also figure out cooking and then.
And your brain takes so much energy and like being able to work and ride. I mean, that was what I was going to say earlier also about the fact that like you're doing a 30-hour week. Your brain just doesn't really work as well. It just.
Oh my God.
You can't function.
I couldn't even read my book. I had my book under this. I was like, oh, just a zombie. So and then I got Fred and then you have to recalibrate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think just going back to like the partner piece, like the evolution of Dylan and then my career has sort of like over the years started intertwining. And there have been plenty of couples counseling sessions where it was like us, the number one thing that we like, this is 3 or 4 years ago. The number one thing that was like the source of tension in our relationship was my equipment. And like, because Dylan is a pro level mechanic. And so all those years, like he's had every single job in the bike industry. So like Dylan was helping me like figure out like how to work like as a privateer, my contracts. Cause like he was like, oh, well, if we sign with this company that makes components and wheels, then like, it's going to be a conflict with Specialized, you know, like it's a web to figure out. And so just naturally, like his involvement with my career has always been like, not just like this supportive role, but like very much an active role in that. And so then, you know, it, the compensation side too, like I started paying Dylan, you know, a salary too, because I'm like, well, I mean, and if anyone who owns a bicycle who's raced a bike understands, like finding a good mechanic is gold. And as a bike mechanic, you have to almost know more than a car mechanic, like because the bike industry evolves so quickly. So like Dylan's skill set just naturally fit into like what I needed. And like it became his source of tension because like he had other jobs at the time and couldn't be full-time mechanic. So then I hired other mechanics, but then it was like, they would ask me like, well, why did Dylan do this to your bike? And then Dylan was asking me like, well, why did they do this to your bike?
That's the worst feeling ever.
Oh my God, I'm done. I want to be a teacher. So I've heard a couple of my peers, you know, female peers make the comment like, oh, well, we don't have like a Dylan in our life. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. I understand. Like he is valuable, but also like that took a lot of work to get to the point where it was like healthy and like, cause I mean, Dylan and I are really independent people. Like I never in a million years thought I would be working with my husband or future husband, you know, like that was just never in like, but it makes sense for us. And we figured out like last year, I remember flying back from Europe the second time in my race season, like with some solid results. And I was like, hell yeah. Like we did the work and we figured this out and we actually still enjoy each other.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sugarcoat that because it is so hard. It took a lot of effort to get there. And it is like an ever-changing, evolving project. Like there was like a full year of me packing for bike races in tears because like it would frustrate Dylan, it would frustrate me. So like it's just hard, you know, like it's hard to do that. And it's a lot of stress on Dylan, you know, like I when I have a shitty result, and when I'm having a bad race, it like really is a heavy feeling. Sure. Like at Leadville was like a tough time because I'm like, Dylan is dedicating, like those feed zones are so, you know what it takes to be a support person at Unbound? You know how boring that is?
Yeah.
And then it's like boring or stressful, which is the two worst things. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's not fun. And then when I'm having a bad day out there, it's like, oh man, it's like, it sucks. I'm not going to like, there's no two ways around that. Like, I just, you know, I was like crying and climbing up the final climb at Leadville, knowing that I like missed my whole goal, you know, of this A race. And Dylan was out there in the rain, you know, committing his weekend, his month of all of that. It's, you know, it sucks. It's like not a cool part, but it's, you know, it's part of the sport. So
yeah,
there's that.
No, but kudos to you for one, sharing so candidly, but also like doing the work to make it work. Like a lot of people will just be like, oh yeah, like natural fit. And I mean, like my own experience, my partner and I've started to do like some professional work together. It's not the same as like having your husband be your bike mechanic, because the other part of it is like you are exerting so much physical energy that you may not be the best communicator when you come into a feed zone. Yeah. Like I think about like when Jake and I do an ultra together.
Water.
Yeah. When we do an ultra together, and if I'm like physically fried, sometimes I'm just mean and I need his help with something and I cannot articulate it. And as much as we're like teammates in that moment, we're also in a romantic relationship. So you have to be like, you can't just like leave the office and go home. You know, there's not that separation. Yeah. So, I mean, just kudos to you for doing the work and sharing candidly. And also like, Dylan sounds like a unicorn in the mechanical department. We all need one of those, whether that's our husband or just a guy or gal. You know?
Yeah. I think if I had any advice to, you know, women whose partners are the mechanic and or men whose partners are the mechanic, like, I think just like any way that you can like share the value of that and like appreciate the value, like, you know, obviously like my sponsors are paying me. And like, again, this is like a professional, like I'm talking at like, this is my salary. This is how we pay our mortgage. But now like, you know, however we organized that, like payment was the easiest way for me. And Dylan refused for years. And I was like, nope, this is your job. Like you are a professional at that. That would be like me, you know, just doing all of this for free too. So like, I think just any way that you can like show that appreciation and like share, you know, if it's income, then that's one thing, or like, you know, have it be well balanced. Cause like, I don't know, anytime like Dylan gets to go, you know, do his own thing, it like, oh my God, it also brings me relief too. Cause I just like, it's this weird like line that we walk. Like it could have been either one of us. It just happened to be me signing the pro contract and Dylan not signing a pro contract. And like, that was a big hurdle to get over too. Cause Dylan's like a pro level enduro racer and very well could have been. And that was really hard when I first signed my contract. Cause it was like, it's just, I mean, I think you just never know, you know, what is going on. And like, you see these other, you know, people with their partners who are their support systems and you're just like, oh, must be nice. But you're like, also could be shitty.
You really don't know what's behind the curtain. And it's so easy to be
totally.
Like,
on that, either side.
Yeah, it's like, that looks great, and it could very well be awful. So does Dylan...
I think just being appreciative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does he go to all the races with you now?
Not all. Like, the big ones for sure. Like, the ones that are, like, crew intensive. So, like, Unbound. Basically, like, all of the Grand Prix races.
All the Grand Prix
races,
events.
But then, I also have to, like... I have to say, like, I have Anna Gritas, who works for SRAM. And she's my mechanic and support at the races that Dylan isn't.
That's wonderful. I love
Anna. And she's amazing. Like, she, all similar to Dylan, is like such a unicorn. Like, she's like the right personality for a mechanic. She's a skilled mechanic. She'll like come and do like a bike check. She knows how I am at races. Like, she always like comes to me at the line, gets all my clothes, like shows me what she's wearing. We have a feed zone plan. Like, she does the bottle handoff or the pack handoff and then like finds me at the end of the race with a LaCroix, which got me like a partial LaCroix sponsorship.
What?
I'm sorry, what?
What? Wait a very
whatever until now. Hasn't that been the theme forever? Somebody get me a LaCroix sponsorship?
I know. So it's like not as cool as it sounds. It's just like,
so cool.
I mean, it is cool.
No matter what,
like,
it's cool.
I was like, oh, LaCroix helmet wrap would be so dope. But
oh
yeah, she handed me a LaCroix at a Steamboat. And then like, there were people that were getting into like a comment battle with LaCroix on the photo that I had My dad had to tell me about this because I think things got deleted. Oh. I had no idea. Yeah. You two are the funniest audience.
We're invested. But we anyway, want to know.
Then LaCroix DM'd me and was like, hey, like, we'd love to send you like these quarterly like care packages. Whoa. We don't sponsor anyone, but like, so now I'll just get like a box of like LaCroix on our doorstep, and then like a weird like holiday themed like bunch of LaCroix shots.
That's amazing.
Who needs which a some Feed helmet cool? wrap? Put the LaCroix helmet wrap on.
Oh my god. Sorry, Feed, if that happens. Love bubbly water. But anyway, Anna's amazing. She too is like, I hope SRAM knows what what a unicorn and how valuable she is. So, I mean, she truly, like, having a good mechanic is like part of, I mean, it's like 50% of the success of an athlete.
Especially when you're tearing up your equipment, riding in nasty weather, and you needed to, and training especially. I'm sure having Dylan there has been really helpful in those days where you're like, yeah, my bike doesn't work. Can you fix it before I go?
Oh, don't get me wrong. Sometimes it'll still be like, we'll be on a ride and he's like, why is your bike creaking? Why didn't you tell me about that? And I'm like, because when I tell you about things, you yell at me. So why would I tell you about things? So I told him, I think my seat height is different. He goes, no. All your seat heights are the same. And it was different.
Hey, I'm impressed that you noticed it though. That's good.
It's that 1%.
That 1%.
Yeah, I was like, the backs of my knees are hurting.
Oh.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, we covered all the big things. Peeing in your pants, mechanic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Membership. Swift.
Taylor Swift.
LaCroix.
I'm curious. I kind of know the answer now. But you before, okay, we talked in 2019, or maybe it was 2020, about you joining Veloce Exploro, and it didn't work out because you're on this amazing track and what you're doing, and it's wonderful to see. You at the time, I think, were still working as a graphic designer then. Are you doing any of that now? And I ask selfishly because I'm really curious on how it would even be possible to do all the things. But are you doing any side work or any graphic or anything like that?
Yeah. The most straightforward answer is no. Like, in terms of like actually running my own business still, like, no, there's absolutely no way I could do that.
It'd be impossible.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, I can barely like sketch in a sketchbook right now. Just mainly because I have filled my cup with other projects instead of creative ones. But no, yes and no. I'll do like one-off projects. I'll have like old clients call me up and ask for like little tweaks to logos or labels and that sort of thing. And I'm always happy to do that. But as far as like full scale, like graphic designer, like, there's no way I can do that. It's crazy.
Well, then what I also selfishly, I'm into this field now where I'm trying to deal with training and being, I guess, what you could literally consider an influencer. Like, I mean, I hate to say it. Athletes are becoming that now. They have to be. Otherwise, you're not, you know, your sponsors are not going to continue.
Well, also, I mean, athletes have always been influencers. That was our job. Like, before social media, like,
influencers,
like, you rode around with like logos.
It's just thrown around like a dirty word now, which is kind of annoying because like...
Yeah. Well, you have like the influencers in the wild that like literally they're just like they're people of influence for some random reason, you know, whether it's looks or like the one viral video that
they
had
got in the game earlier or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. So like those I think are influencers. Athletes, I don't know.
Athletes have influence, but...
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And that obviously, like, I have been labeled influencer, which is why I'm like, well.
I think that it's hard because, I mean, there's all, you know, there's athlete, there's influencer. I think athletes are influencers, like you just said. But the, like, dealing with the obligations or working through the obligations that you have when you sign contracts and through the year, have you, in the last couple of years, learned how much you can handle and
you know, how do you work through those when you're doing, actually, and I'm curious with your like negotiations, obviously you said Dylan helps mm-hmm. you, like how have those changed and knowing yourself better? And I know this is like a bucket question, so feel free to answer in any way.
No, I love the it. Answer, no, it's no, I love it. Cause like I just gave an interview to a friend who's writing a piece actually for the New York Times.
Oh, cool.
About privateers.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Cool.
Yeah. So it was good because I like had to think about all this, but I think there's just like certain personality types that like really lend themselves to like the privateer lifestyle. And by lifestyle, I mean, you're balancing this career as like a high end athlete. And you're competing against people who literally like their job is just defined as winning races. And for me, that would never fly. I think I would be less successful if I had. And I had, you know, a factory opportunity. And I just kind of knew that that was just not. I mean, maybe I would have more time to do art if I did that. But I sort of think like my career is sort of my like creative outlet now, which I love. Like I like the marketing side. You know, Dylan and I both come from a background in marketing. So like that part is fun for me, and I like, you know, managing those relationships, but it is a lot, you know, like I luckily have the financial support of amazing sponsors, so I can be like, hey, Specialized, I need a bike fit, like mm-hmm. can you mm-hmm. help me set this up yeah. in Denver, and like, you know, whatever, like that's easy. But then it's like I'm doing my own logistics, I'm doing like with a lot of my contracts, like I would say my top three, those are equal, well, heavier weighted on the salary side. So I just get paid a base salary no matter what. So I know I'm going to make my mortgage payment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I also have bonuses. So race bonuses. So like when I got third at Unbound, I got paid from like a lot of different sponsors, which I always forget about. And it's such a lovely thing that happens. It's clearly not a motivator, but it is really nice to cash in on that. Mm-hmm. A lot of factory athletes have a really higher level race bonus. So like their bonus schedule, I mean, they could make 50 grand wow. or more, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. whereas mine is capped at a certain amount. So like, but then I get more on the, you know, I can't really discuss like specifics, but I think it's interesting for people to know how it works. And then for me, I think 10 partnerships is really my limit. And that over the years went from like a lot of them were like unpaid, but like equipment and like gear. And now all of them, especially when we brought the bus into the conversation, like it's obviously like a really great platform for, you know, eyeballs and getting people to see logos and whatnot. And kit too, but I try to keep my kit pretty clean and like design focused with Rafa. So each partnership sort of has its own thing. And then that sometimes becomes a lot to manage. Like I now have a spreadsheet of like, okay, like this, they're all, it's sort of like clients with graphic design. Like, okay, like this sponsor, like I have to invoice them quarterly, and this sponsor, I invoice them, you know, biannually and for this much. And then I have to make sure. Because I actually have...
You have to send the invoices. If you forget to send the invoice, you don't get paid.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I mean, I was like, oh my God, it's already March. And I missed like two February invoices. And I will preface this with like, this is the side of sport that I am not great at. I have pretty severe ADHD. And so like the admin side is really challenging for me. And I just have to have... I do it in like the most chaotic way ever.
Same.
It would stress accountants
out. If you saw
out.
My spreadsheet too, you'd probably be like, oh my God.
This is why
the fact
I have
a spreadsheet.
This is why I have a bookkeeper because
I have an accountant. I need a bookkeeper. Yeah.
I will say the bookkeeper actually is like all of
gold.
My friends who are freelancers or athletes or anything like that going into tax season were freaking out getting all their stuff together. And I still had to get a couple things, but literally all I did was tell my bookkeeper, hey, can you give the accountant access to QuickBooks? And that was like basically it. And
what a blessing.
And I was like, I was frustrated when I was like, oh, do I want to pay for a bookkeeper all year? But it seriously, it changed it. The game. In
I know,
terms
I pay
of,
my
like,
accountant a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, it's, yeah, it's like the less sexy side of all of this, right? But like, as a privateer and as like an independent contractor, as a self-employed person, you know, I've tried to even like bring in like insurance benefits to conversations, which is super messed up on insurance companies.
Yes.
You're a liability. So they won't cover you if you're a professional athlete.
Whoa.
It's not even the brands.
Wow.
Like, unless, I guess they could hire you as an employee.
Boy, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But then you don't get a race bonus.
So, oh, like, interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So anyway, the admin side is a lot. And then like I mentioned before, like my top sponsors are like salary and bonus focus. And then like there often is like a social media expectation, which is like, it's sort of just inherent now. Like you have to, if you have a sourdough starter, I sort of think of it like you're sour. You just have to feed the bitch all the time, you know?
Feed the monster. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're feeding it every day. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of, you know, a given. And then I have like some of my like middle range sponsors that are like, they'll like pad in like, hey, we need you for these things and these projects. And then, you know, it just kind of varies from there. And it is a lot to manage. And like, sometimes I feel like I'm doing a terrible job, and then sometimes I'm doing a good job. And what I have learned over the last 5 years of like really making this job is that you just have to be super communicative and just say like, hey, I right now, like these months, like April through November, my focus is on the race calendar, and I will squeeze in these projects. But like, if they're not planned like in February, it's really hard for me to prioritize them, you know? And like, around a race weekend, people will be like, I mean, sponsors will ask like, hey, we need you here for this. Sea Otter's the worst, as we all know. At least this year, my race is on Friday, so then I can like stay on Saturday and do all that stuff on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So awesome. But yeah, it's really, it's taken a lot of learning, and a lot of learning the hard way to get there. So I've overcooked myself before plenty of races where I'm like, ha! All the girls who finished in front of me, I never saw them at the venue. Oh, duh.
Yeah. Well, live and learn. Live and learn.
That's all you can do.
Yeah, that's life. Well, shall we wrap up with some this or that? More hot takes from Sarah Sturm, as if you haven't given us enough. Okay, starting off, because Lifetime Grand Prix is literally around the corner, you got Sea Otter coming up. Which is your favorite event of the Grand Prix?
Ooh. I actually, okay, I love Schwamigan.
Oh, I've heard Schwamigan is a wild... Wasn't it slippery last year? Like, super
2 years
wet?
Ago, it was mega mud fest. Okay. It's just, it reminds me of cyclocross in like the most wholesome Midwest way. I love it. It's like, it was just so funny because I'm pretty sure like there was rumors of the Grand Prix cutting Schwamigan because it's like, it's not like a Leadville or an Unbound, but I love it. Although I might have to skip it this year, but yeah.
Oh no.
Will you skip one race, just one race this year?
I'm doing something I've never done, but because I'm doing the Gravel Earth series also, I think I'm going to skip two.
Wow.
Which is not how you win the Grand Prix, by the way. That's not the strategy.
No, but if you're doing both the
I might
Earth
be eating
series,
my words.
No, yeah. You're not. Yeah. You're going to do great. If you're doing both series, though, that makes a lot of sense. So then...
Yeah, I just kind of learned about recovery last year after Chaka and Unbound. And if you don't do it, you kind of suck in the middle of your season.
Yeah,
so... the strategy with the Grand Prix is race all of them and then drop your two lowest. Mm-hmm. And then the strategy to win is not go in knowing you're going to drop two races because it puts a lot of pressure on. Mm. So,
well, then with the follow up on that, which Gravel or Series race are you looking forward to the most?
Migration Gravel. a stage race in Kenya.
Yes, yeah. You're going? Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's so exciting. That is
I am fun. I am so excited. I love stage racing. I've always wanted to go to Kenya. I am so cool. Pumped. I'm also like properly nervous about just like the travel and all the admin.
Yeah, it's
so
is Dylan gonna go and he can't help you during the race, right?
No, but he'll go.
Okay, cool. I mean, what an experience.
Why not? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Help you before and after.
Yeah, nice. We're excited.
Okay, well, fun. You hate Taylor Swift. You listen to... What's your... never letting that
one
go.
Wait. You hate Taylor Swift's music, but you music. Love Taylor
music.
Swift.
We stand Taylor you. Swift herself.
Thank you. We love Taylor.
We love Taylor.
Just support her all the way.
Pop. I'm not a pop girl.
But I digress. Okay, so not pop. What is your pre-race pump up or get in the zone, like focus, whatever that song is?
Why did I just pull a blank on... Oh, Sophie Tucker is like my new jam.
Oh.
They're this like DJ duo.
Oh, I love a DJ duo.
Oh my God. Well, the guy kind of looks like Dylan. So like maybe that's like I'm a sucker. But they're amazing. They're a good pump up playlist for sure. It's sort of like a good beat, that sort of thing, you know. But I'm definitely not listening to music in the morning because my brain, my ADHD brain, couldn't handle one more thing.
It's a lot of stimulation
at 5 a.m.
before the start.
Yeah,
of the
for race. Cyclocross, it was important, but less so for gravel racing. I don't need more nerves.
Okay, well, I think I know part of this because I'm sure Norman is somewhere around. But what do you do when you're not riding?
Oh, when I'm not riding?
Yeah, when you're not riding.
Oh, I am hanging with my doggy. We go. Yeah, that was like when I was in that like block of training in Tucson. I was like really excited for my rest day, which was never restful because I would take Norman on like some epic hike into the mountains on Lemon. And I was laughing because I went with my friend Sophia, recommended this like waterfall we get to, and this is where like I know you two have this thing, we're sick in the head, and like I have to see the thing if we go. my sister doesn't have this. My sister Hannah, who's like my best friend, she is the full opposite. She's like, I hiked enough to get like a small little endorphin boost. I'd like to be doing something else, where I'm like, but there's a waterfall at the end, even though I'm literally holding Norman over in like crotch deep water in river.
No.
And like holding him on this like granite boulder. And he's, I mean, Norman's 10.
Oh,
and I'm like,
God.
This is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. He was fine. But I'm like, this is, not, I was
did you
sore.
See it?
My like, I saw the damn waterfall.
Yeah, you did.
It took us 4.5 hours.
Wow.
Good rest day, Sarah. Good rest day. Did you put that one in Training Peaks?
Nope. I didn't tell my coach.
Nope.
He has Instagram, though, so he was like,
explain? Yeah. Well,
amazing.
This has been the best, truly
super
the
fun.
Best. Good way to wake up with all the giggles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
I'm going
to
go
listen to
Taylor Swift.
Gosh.
So.
I know everyone's going to send me Taylor Swift songs. I feel like I have to like a couple of hers.
There's
and I do
few.
Love Beyonce.
Oh, all right.
I like Beyonce and the Lady Gaga. Actually, okay, I'm sorry. I like Beyonce, Miley, and Lady Gaga.
You know, okay. I don't like Beyonce, so the Hive,
oh.
I know. I respect her, like her. I don't like her music
Lemonade?
That much. Yeah.
Have you watched the visual album?
No, and that might change my mind.
You watch the visual album.
It's a visual album.
Is that what you watch
Lemonade?
On the trainer? You watch that while you're on the
yes.
trainer. Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'll watch that today because it's
oh,
super
my God.
Grim, so trainer it
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You have to do it in order.
Yes. Oh, I know how, Sarah. Tip. I know how to listen to an album. You got to go cover to cover. Come on.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And I've tried. I've tried with Taylor Swift, so you could try with Beyonce.
Oh, look
I can
this.
Do it.
Okay, a challenge.
I can do it.
I like it.
You can
it.
Do it. I can't wait to hear.
I will update you on how my journey goes.
Your journey.
Yes.
Lemonade.
Yes. I love it.
I get to see you in like a month, Sarah. At Traca. Amazing.
I know. Are you getting there early?
Yeah, I'll be there on the 27th or 28th. I race Wednesday, though. So
okay,
while you're racing, I'll be cheering for you. I'll be out there like,
oh my God, so I can see you off.
Yeah, on Wednesday morning, and also potentially at the finish on Thursday. I don't know. It might be kind of, I don't know what time. It might take me like 30 hours. We'll see. But I hopefully we'll be like,
you're going to love it.
I'm so excited. Oh, I'm really, I've heard we go through that park. I think that you all went through last year, but are not going through this year. There's that like really cool, I don't know. Anyway, I haven't looked at the route yet.
Oh, I hope there's that single track. Oh, I have not. This is the first I'm hearing of it.
Yes, I mean,
which ironically is what cost me the win last year, was not like knowing
not
the course.
Knowing the course. Mm.
But I mean, there's no way. Like, it's not. We don't live in Girona. I could not have pre-ridden. Amity had lived out there and pre-ridden the course. So,
well,
it'll
I'm
be great
to see you. Good luck at Sea Otter.
Sea Otter.
Good luck.
First kickoff.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Enjoy. Yeah. I'll be cheering for you.
Oh, you guys, this is so great. We'll have to like actually go get a beer or hang out, so it's not like a one-sided podcast. I was like, end these, and I'm like, great. I just talked about myself for an hour and a half.
No, that's the whole point. People want to know.
People want to know.
I know. It's just still funny because I'm like, I actually just want to hear about your stuff.
So
we should have the other side of the conversation.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen. Cool. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great day.